friends. Welcome to another episode of Kyle's Sports Corner. Well, the NBA season is over, and the Los Angeles Lakers emerged victorious, securing their 17th title in franchise history to tie the Boston Celtics for most championships all time. Okay, just kidding. This is Unboxing God. McCall just asked me to intro the show this week, and by now you should know that I do things my way. So how did the National Basketball Association pull off the remainder of their season after all games were suspended in mid-March? The league spent $170 million to create a bubble in Orlando, Florida. Team players and personnel were tested and quarantined before they could participate. The net result was that the basketball season resumed on July 30th and concluded last week on October 11th, about 4 months later than usual. The total number of positive COVID cases during this period? Zero. For players and staff, the safest place to be was in the middle of the bubble. If you're old enough, you may remember seatbelt laws sweeping the nation in the 80s and 90s. One of the silly arguments against them was, "I'd rather be thrown clear of my vehicle in an accident," as though being ejected through a pane of glass, then flying through the air at 30 miles an hour, and landing wherever physics drops you, was a safer alternative to being strapped in your seat for a collision. Regardless, in the intervening decades, we have seen widespread advances in airbag technology, including side airbags that now protect backseat passengers as well. By all objective measures, the safest place to be during a car crash is inside the bubble of your vehicle. When McCall was pregnant with our first child, she was, like so many new moms to be, full of excitement, but also worry and concern. One of the things we wanted to do was prevent our cats from going into the bedroom nursery we were preparing for our daughter. So we got this shock mat that you placed at the entrance of the room. If any of the cats tried to enter, they would get a mild electrical shock that was intended to train them not to go in. One day, McCall, forgetting all about the shock mat, stepped right on it and absolutely freaked out that she'd electrocuted our baby in utero. Thankfully, she felt a kick that set her mind at ease, and I think the shock mat got thrown out too. But something we didn't know until our next prenatal appointment was just how well protected a developing fetus is within the womb. Early in a pregnancy, the pelvic bone acts as a shield, but once the abdomen expands beyond that protection, the body has other natural shock absorbers, including abdominal muscles, uterine muscles, fetal membranes, and perhaps most importantly, amniotic fluid, all of which act together to cushion against blows. In fact, the amniotic fluid acts to distribute the force of impact equally in all directions in the event of a fall. So regardless of whether you want to complete your basketball season, get from point A to point B, or deliver a healthy baby, we see the safest place to be is cushioned in the middle of a protective bubble. This week's episode really packs a punch and a few kicks, as McCall had three conversations with different martial arts practitioners who offer their insights into the importance of finding an equilibrium where one is not teetering at either end of two extremes, but instead expands that line to an encompassing sphere at the center of which lies safety and security.
Good and evil, right and wrong, black and white. These are all easily recognizable dichotomies that we see played out around us all the time. But in real life, how many things are actually good or evil, right or wrong, black or white? Most of our actions, intentions, and experiences fall somewhere in between. I'd like to introduce you to a friend of my mom's. Her name is Beth Walensky, and by day, she's an attorney in New York City. But in her spare time, she studies a little-known and kind of secretive practice of martial arts that melds aspects of Kung Fu and Tai Chi and Karate with the philosophies of Jewish Kabbalah, a sort of mystical spiritualism. This fighting style, whose name I am not to mention, was developed almost 50 years ago, but it's taught exclusively among Jews in yeshivas, Jewish community centers, and synagogues. I caught up with Beth while she was preparing Seder dinner for Yom Kippur, the Jewish Day of Atonement, when Jews seek redemption for their sins and emerge spiritually clean, created anew in the image of God.
It doesn't matter how the creation happened. It matters more why the creation happened.
And what's your why?
It boils down to love. God or whatever. We call it it, or jokingly the big number one, which has no sex, no gender. It combines all attributes. You know, it's not divided into light and dark.
It's funny. I used to call it the perfect zero because that indicated balance. Like it's every number and no numbers. And if it's in every number, you multiply by it and it becomes it. Like that's I am to me. I'm real into the math patterns.
So why was there creation? And the Kabbalistic concept that we learned is that God loved and contracted and made a space that was enough space for there to be creation. You know, does it matter how the imagery of it worked, whether it was a big bang or...
I think it's as unimportant as the end. I think the beginning is as unimportant as the end because my whole life I've been living in the past and the future with anxiety and depression and shame and blame and guilt, that the now, right now, is the only thing that isn't an illusion right now. And being in this moment and being both, not just both, but all physical, mental, and spiritual, there's a completeness that I feel and a presence and a connection that I'm enabled with other people. It cuts through the static.
We are trained to think linearly.
Mm-hmm.
And religion, the Torah or the Kabbalah or any of those things, they don't happen linearly so that the past and the present and the future all exist at the same time. So as much as you are McCall at 40, you're also the kid playing in the playground at 10, and you're also
the old crone on my deathbed.
One of the basic Kabbalistic concepts is that God creates the universe anew every day.
Mm.
The world is in a constant state of creation.
I like that.
You can change. You can repent, you can correct. There are things you can do because the universe is new every day.
I guess growing up with the family disease of alcoholism, I spent so much time trying to control my surroundings to fit my idea of what might make me happy, or complaining and hating and being angry for being robbed of it as the victim. And as you said, this system has taught you a confidence that has given you a freedom to own your space, that my refocusing on myself and changing me to adapt to the surroundings instead of trying to change my surroundings to adapt to me. There's one of my spiritual guides happens to also be a martial artist, and it's Bruce Lee. And my son and I use one of his quotes, "Be water, my friend," to remind each other to flow and adapt and not try to force change outside of us, but to take the shape of whatever container we're in for that moment.
Water is one of the most powerful elements. Be water doesn't only mean that you're flowing. You can destroy, you can nurture. Water is amazing.
You can carve stone.
Yes, exactly.
Not with a huge sledgehammer that shatters, but slowly erodes and wears away because of the consistency.
That's how you can do Tai Chi as opposed to martial arts. What you learn at one level is that your energy, it's like a wave. It's a back and a forth, a back and a forth, and in and out. But if you want, you use the power of the tide going out as much as the tide coming in. It's all, as you said, there's a lot of balance that has to happen.
Yeah.
Water is my sign. I'm not fire. I'm not metal. I'm not earth. I'm water.
kind of feel like I'm D all of the above and just learning how to not be a chameleon and have my environment or interactions change what I am, but find my true balance internally has been a lot of my personal pursuit.
Yeah, because as you say, if you don't own yourself and you're always trying, and this is a female thing also where you're trying to please other people. Mm-hmm. If you're not just trying to please other people, if you're only being yourself, you know, that takes a lot of responsibility on your shoulders.
That's why I am choosing to explore a divine with whom I can share said responsibility. My ego, left unchecked, vacillates way big or way broken and small and dismissive of self. Connecting me with something greater than me outside of me shares that responsibility, the pride, the shame. I don't have to wear it all on my shoulders. There's a balance that isn't on a spectrum with like one fulcrum that goes back and forth, but is more like the center of a sphere.
So when we do a form in Taiji, there are different geometries, but one of them is that you're in the center of a circle and the circle is inside a square.
Love it.
The points of danger, or I don't even know the name for this shape, but where the circle meets the square is fine. But in those gaps where it's not the circle and it's just like the corners, those edges,
right,
that's where danger lurks.
Huh. Because that is the square without the circle. That is man without divine. In Eastern philosophy, the idea of the compass and the curve edges being higher power and the straight lines that don't really naturally occur is man.
Right. The Indian system, if you look at Indian at yoga or Indian meditation, their shape is the triangle, which is why when they meditate, they're on the floor with their crossed legs. They're creating the shape of the triangle and bringing the energy up from the earth, from the base of the triangle. The Chinese system, you're in a circle. It's not like there's one right. And it's not just a triangle that becomes a pyramid. It's not just a
circle, it's a sphere.
It's always more than two dimensions, and it's always those shapes interacting with each other.
In just one moment, you're going to hear from my friend Rich. He studies Jeet Kune Do. That's the fighting style that Bruce Lee created. Rich and I spoke about the importance of balance and remaining flexible or fluid, like water. Before he became the man, actor, and black belt that we all know of, Bruce Lee studied philosophy at the University of Washington in Seattle. So I think I'll let Bruce himself set the scene.
Martial art has a very, very deep meaning as far as my life is concerned, because as an actor, as a martial artist, as a human being, all these I have learned from martial art.
Maybe for our audience who doesn't know what it means, you might explain exactly what you mean by martial art.
Right. Martial art include all the combative arts like karate or karate, judo, Chinese kung fu or Chinese boxing, whatever you call it. All those. You see, like aikido, Korean, I can go on and on and on. But it's a combative form of fighting. I mean, it's not, some of them became sport, but some of them are still not. I mean, they use, for instance, kicking to the groin, jabbing fingers at the eyes, and things like that.
No wonder you're successful in it. Chinese movies are full of this kind of action anyway. They needed a guy like you could...
Violence, man.
So you didn't have to use a double when you moved into the motion picture world here. You did all yourself.
Right.
Can you break five or six pieces of wood with your hand or your foot?
I'll probably break my hand and foot.
You set up a school in Hollywood, didn't you, for people like
yes.
James Garner and Steve McQueen and the others?
Yes.
Why would they want to learn Chinese martial art? Because of a movie role?
Not really. I mean, most of them, you see, to me, at least the way that when I teach it, all type of knowledge ultimately means self-knowledge. Mm-hmm. So therefore, they're coming in to, and ask me to teach them not so much of how to defend themselves or how to do somebody in, rather, they want to learn to express themselves through some movement, be it anger, be it determination, or whatsoever. So in other words, what I'm saying, therefore, is that he is paying me to show him, in combative form, the art of expressing the human body.
Which is acting, in a sense, isn't it?
Well...
Or it would be a useful tool for an actor to have.
It might sound too philosophical, but it's unacting, acting, or acting, unacting, if you...
You've lost me.
I have, right? So what I'm saying, actually, you see, I mean, it's a combination of both. I mean, here it is, the natural instinct, and here is control. You are to combine the two in harmony. If you have one to the extreme, you will be very unscientific. If you have another to the extreme, you become all of a sudden a mechanical man, no longer a human being. It is a successful combination of both. So therefore, it is not pure naturalness or unnaturalness. The ideal is unnatural naturalness or natural unnaturalness.
Yin yang, eh?
Right, man, that's it.
Tell me a little bit about your exploration into martial arts.
Yeah, the martial art that I'm focusing on is Jeet Kune Do. It's derivative of Wing Chun, which is an older Chinese martial arts. Have you ever seen like Ip Man? Or this is like Bruce Lee's take on Wing Chun and his philosophy behind.
Wait, Bruce Lee?
Yeah, this is his specific martial art.
Oh, stop it. You know that that's how my son used to remind me to practice program. He would say,
"That's cool,
mommy, be water, my friend, be water."
Yeah, I think just the general philosophy of just flowing like water is incredible. And it's one of the things that I love about his training so much is that there's this balance of when we're striking and when we're punching, or when somebody is punching us, we're thinking about things from, if I'm defending, I'm also attacking. So there's a balance within your own technique.
Literally the yin and yang.
Exactly. In every single movement, it creates an efficiency and it creates, like you said, balance. Balance in your footwork, balance in your stature, balance in your overall demeanor. It's incredible. I guess just the idea for me of attacking while defending or attacking to defend.
And defending to attack.
And defending to attack is counterintuitive to the way that I was trained to do anything in life.
You are either defense or offense.
Yeah.
If you're playing football, in anything, we're trained mentally to think in a dichotomy, in a black and white, us and them. A two-point system.
Yeah, and the people who are attackers or can score or who have that mindset are the people who usually are rewarded with the most things. Our society gives them the most accolades, money, everything that you can think of. So what's amazing about Jeet Kune Do is that attacking isn't always worth it because somebody's defense could be far better than your attack. My sensei, the guy who's training me, my teacher, he is incredible as far as his counterattack far outweighs any attack that I have. Even if I come at him with a flurry, he can get one punch on me that negates the entire attack. It's incredibly challenging to fight somebody who is truly fluid without hesitation, who can just move opposite you, can match your same style and do it right back at you. It's only to create balance. Because in Jeet Kune Do, it's free-for-all, essentially. They don't really revise your technique. You know, a lot of martial arts are like, hey, we want you to do this thing, and this is the proper way. This is the way to do it. Jeet Kune Do does have that technique and the emphasis on skills and having the correct technique. But if you are fighting, then you're fighting for a good reason. And that reason is to create balance. And so we learn all these different techniques and we pick up so many different things from so many different styles and where people are coming from and their backgrounds.
You see, actually, I do not teach, you know, karate because I do not believe in styles anymore. I mean, I do not believe that there is such thing as like Chinese way of fighting or the Japanese way of fighting or whatever way of fighting. So styles tends to not only separate men, you know, because they have their own doctrines, and then the doctrine became the gospel truth, you know, that you cannot change, you know. But if you do not have styles, if you just say, well, here I am, you know, as a human being, how can I express myself totally and completely? Now, that way, you won't create a style, because style is a crystallization, you know. I mean, that way, it's a process of continuing growth.
One of the core tenets of Jeet Kune Do is assimilating aspects of other fighting styles and incorporating them into the practice. Instead of saying this way or that way or not this way or not that way, a bunch of what Joseph Campbell calls thou shalts, Jeet Kune Do says, to some degree, your way. It creates a space for beginners to find techniques that work for them. Perhaps one might even say it provides a bubble to safely explore a challenging martial arts without demands for perfection.
Whenever one moves out of the transcendent, one comes into a field of opposites. These two pairs of opposites come forth as male and female from the two sides. One has eaten of the tree of the knowledge, not only of good and evil, but of male and female, of right and wrong, of this and that, and light and dark. Everything in the field of time is dual, past and future. Dead and alive, all this, being and non-being, is, isn't. They always come in pairs, and put your mind in the middle. Most of us put our minds on the side of the good against what we think of as evil. It was Heraclitus, I think, who said, for God, all things are good and right and just, but for man, some things are right and others are not. You're in the field of time when you're man. And one of the problems of life is to live in the realization of both terms. That's to say, I know the center, and I know that good and evil are simply temporal apparitions.
Nietzsche's fundamental underlying argument was always that human values are created by humans, rather than like the gods or nature or some underlying fundamental reality. And through his kind of autobiographical character Zarathustra, Nietzsche argues that good and evil are really just names that we humans attribute to certain actions, behaviors, and ideas for more strategic reasons.
The three transformations of the spirit.
Yeah.
That's Nietzsche. That's the prologue to Thus Spake Zarathustra.
Tell me that story.
When you are a child, when you are young and a young person, you are a camel. The camel gets down on its knees and says, put a load on me. This is obedience. This is receiving the instruction and information that your society knows you must have in order to live a competent life. When the camel is well loaded, he gets up on his feet, struggles to his feet, and runs out into the desert, where he becomes transformed into a lion. The heavier the load, the more powerful the lion. The function of the lion is to kill a dragon. And the name of the dragon is Thou Shalt. And on every scale of the dragon, there is a Thou Shalt imprinted. Some of it comes from 2,000 years, 4,000 years ago. Some of it comes from yesterday morning's newspaper headline. When the dragon is killed, the lion is transformed into a child, an innocent child living out of its own dynamic. And Nietzsche uses the term, ein aus sich rollendes Rad, a wheel rolling out of its own center. That's what you become. That is the mature individual. the thou shalt is a civilizing force. It turns a human animal into a civilized human being. But then the one who is thrown off the thou shalt is still a civilized human being. You see, he has been humanized, you might say, by the thou shalt system. So his performance now as a child is not simply childlike at all. He has assimilated the culture and thrown it off as a thou shalt. But this is the way in any artwork. You go to work and study an art. You study the techniques. You study all the rules. And the rules are put upon you by a teacher. Then there comes a time of using the rules, not being used by them. Do you understand what I'm saying? One way is to follow, I always tell my students, follow your bliss.
Follow your bliss?
Your bliss, where the deep sense of being in form and going where your body and the soul want to go. When you have that feeling, then stay with it and don't let anyone throw you off.
Sticking with the theme of martial arts, I reached out to two friends of mine, Master Tanya Baggett and Master Wally Baggett. They own Sunset Sansu. It's a kung fu studio. They do a lot of fight choreography for the movie industry, but they also teach a self-defense workshop known as WAP. Workshop for Assault Prevention. It was developed by Tanya and Wally, along with their teacher, Master Larry Wickel, for participants who, while not interested in studying martial arts per se, were hungry to learn some practical, street-smart, effective techniques of self-protection for real-life situations where safety was threatened. They use aggressive principles of body force and balance. And they teach people of all sizes, strengths, ages, experience, genders, physical speed, and dexterity, explaining to me that even a very small woman could learn to subdue a very large man and put him on the ground in mere seconds with very little effort on her part, or for that matter, subdue multiple attackers with minimal additional effort. Oh, and Tanya is a dance professional, choreographer, and dancer herself. So, who better to ask about balance?
One of the things I love about Eastern philosophies and religions and arts is a sense of restorative balance that I feel like the Western world and my exposure has lacked. We become very dichotomous and pendular. We swing so wildly back and forth. We haven't found that equilibrium as a people yet, I don't think. And I don't know how much our faiths instill the balance in this culture. And I started talking about the yin yang.
Yeah.
So will you make some connections for me on the art you practice and program a larger life lesson about balance that you've found?
My hardest times growing up were mostly junior high school and high school, and when I first left home and went to college. And so I've likened first with Kung Fu. When I got my yellow belt, I said, I feel like I just got out of junior high school. And I don't know about you, but I don't ever want to repeat my teen years.
You don't want to do over with the tools you have now?
Well, sure. What is that? Youth is wasted on the young kind of thing, but
everything is.
Yeah. But as I moved along and grew in the art, I felt like I was getting a do-over. So by the time I got my black belt, I felt like I was graduating from high school. And anyway, in terms of balance, for me, everything is the same. I heard someone say that to them, humility is a willingness to learn. That works for me. Kung Fu and dance and Al-Anon and any recovery work, even my therapy, have all been an opportunity to get a do-over. And now I don't mind so much when I have those days where I feel like I'm a sophomore in high school again for a second, because now I know where I am and what I'm doing much better. And the best part is, I feel, and this is where my balance comes, I feel like I'm glad to be connected with myself. I'm really glad to be me. I don't ever want to be anyone else. And I'm more and more, I don't want to have things that I see other people having or doing that look like things that I've sought for so long. I would say that I love myself so much more than I ever knew I could, as much because of Kung Fu as anything else I've ever done. And it's okay for the green belt to say to the black belt when they're working out, well, that didn't really work. It might be me, but I think, and the black belt, it's okay for them to go, wow, you're right. I've been doing this longer. And look, I have this black belt, but I think I have it because I can learn from you.
Yeah.
And that's a big deal in our class.
That's the humility, the willingness to learn.
Yeah. Balance. It's such a metaphor for everything. Balanced, unbalanced, teetering. But I am in balance. My life is in balance when I am able to go with the flow of what I'm doing. So I don't think a lot about what I'm going to do ahead of time. I'll make up lessons early at Kung Fu because of the way I have to teach, because it being a virtual class. But I just make them up. I don't really think a lot about them. And then Tanya really helps me tons. And I don't always know what I'm going to do. But more specifically, if you and I are fighting, you know, let's say we're in class, because people actually fight. It's not, like I said, it's not really sparring.
It's sparring.
It's really fighting. But we understand what we're doing. And we also take care of each other at the same time. If we're doing that, we both will simultaneously, one before the other, who knows, we go with what's happening.
Uh-huh.
It's very much surrender. Balance and surrender.
It is about being in the moment. You can't be worried about what just happened or what's about to happen. You got to be with what is.
And there is.
What is right now. Everything else is fiction.
There is no good. There is no bad. There is no better. There is no worse. Yeah. It just is.
Actually, you see, that is part of Chinese boxing.
It is.
Well, it's a kind of a slow form of exercise, which is called Tai Chi Chuan. Uh-huh. I'm speaking Mandarin just now.
Yeah.
Cantonese, Tai Chi Kun. Okay?
I see.
And it's more of an exercise. It's very slow.
Oh, is it?
And you push it out, but all the time you are keeping the continuity going. Bending, stretching, everything. You know, you just keep it moving.
It's like a belly dancer there.
Yeah, it is. I mean, to them, you see, the idea is running water never grows stale. So you got to just keep on flowing.
In order to honestly express myself, stay fluid like water in this moment, without distractions of the past or possible futures, in order to stay balanced and really follow my bliss, as Joseph Campbell suggested, I require safety. Well, at least the illusion of safety. To feel protected and give me comfort in the center of a proverbial bubble. I have loved allowing myself full pursuit down every rabbit hole I've discovered on this adventure of unboxing God. And admittedly, I was starting to get pretty deep down the rabbit holes here recently. I legit wanted to come on and tell you all about squaring the circle in alchemy, Da Vinci's Vitruvian Man. I have pages upon pages of notes and interviews about the magic of numbers and connection to shapes. I have gone so far as planning an entire quantum physics episode and was going to explain Carl Sagan's cosmos, which did plant an ever-growing seed in my 7-year-old heart, attempting to verbally describe the concept of Flatland and what a 4-dimensional being might appear to us like in a 3-dimensional world. I straight up still want to tell you about this, but balance, patience. And thank Waldo that I nabbed a cutie yin to my yang in oh so many ways. I am on a quest to expand my metaphysical bubble, if you will. But the rational, humanist, grounded partner that I somehow landed at my physical and financial peak, mind you, really grants me all the more wings to fly closer to the sun. Kyle tethers all of my mystical musings, contemplative wormhole wanderings that seem to feed my ever-growing faith that ultimately we're all in the center. We are developing fetuses with limitless potential, protected by some galactic amniotic fluid. And all my experiments are serving as some sort of umbilical cord, tethering me to what, just for today, I call Waldo, and I wish nothing more than for each of you to follow your bliss, wherever the hell it might lead, from the safe center of a deeply divine connection.
So it's really hard to say. You see what I'm saying now?
I see.
I mean, it's different. So depending on what you see in it.
Interesting that we don't, in our world, and haven't since the days of the Greeks who did, combine philosophy and art with sport. But quite clearly, the Oriental attitude is that the three are facets of the same things.
Man, listen, you see, really, to me, okay, to me, ultimately, martial art means honestly expressing yourself. Now, it is very difficult to do. I mean, it is easy for me to put on a show and be cocky and be flooded with a cocky feeling and then feel like pretty cool and all that. Or I can make all kinds of phony things, you see what I mean, blinded by it. Or I can show you some really fancy movement. But to express oneself honestly, not lying to oneself, and to express myself honestly, now that, my friend, is very hard to do. And you have to train. You have to keep your reflexes so that when you want it, it's there. When you want to move, you're moving. And when you move, you are determined to move. Not taking one inch, not anything less than that. If I want to punch, I'm going to do it, man, and I'm going to do it, you see? So that is the type of thing you have to train yourself into it, to become one with the... You think?
Yeah, this is very un-Western, this attitude.
The more you practice one thing, the more you can learn other things.
Right.
It's really remarkable, because if I practice forming a bowl in pottery, I will get better at something else.
For my life, I've seen significant ramifications of that idea in my relationship with myself, my relationship with others, and my relationship with my higher power. If I find a quality that I like in any one of those three things and amplify it a little bit, that quality strengthens in my relationships with the other two sides. So, for instance, forgiveness. If I find it in myself to forgive what I heretofore thought unforgivable, suddenly I start forgiving myself and giving myself a grace that I didn't even know to look for before. And then I see that as a quality of, for lack of a better word, God. I call him Waldo, just like you have a nickname of the great, what is it? The perfect one?
The big number one.
That's my Waldo. When you hear Waldo, you can think Jesus, Buddha, the big number one, whatever. And we can have a conversation in the overlap, not in the dangerous square corners that don't have the circle.
Empty your mind. Be formless, shapeless, like water. Now you put water into a cup. It becomes the cup. You put water into a bottle, it becomes the bottle. You put it in a teapot, it becomes the teapot. Now water can flow or it can crash. Be water, my friend.
So here's to a week of following your bliss and finding your center. This is McCall. See you next week. Maybe with some quantum physics, who knows? Bye.